Let's talk about the first theme in the Hinastera, where the harp evokes the sounds of the open strings of a guitar, and then the cello comes in with a very plaintive and haunting melody. Later on, he repeats that theme, but in the double bass. Why do you think he chose the deeper instrument for the second time around?
I mean, he's a master at finding the right colors to orchestrate. For example, the biggest one being, if you had to choose to write a piece that featured, you know, the string soli, so the first, the violin, the viola, the cello, double bass, you have to look at the way that he orchestrated all those things, and he knew exactly what would actually be detrimental to each one of those instruments, and what would accompany them best in order to not just be heard somewhat, but actually be featured. So, which is why he chooses for the cello and the double bass to actually be accompanied just by the harp, whereas the violin has a full orchestral accompaniment, and the viola has a somewhat full orchestral accompaniment. But most of the time, the viola is playing a cadenza. It has to do with the understanding of, all right, if a double bass plays solo, you're not going to have a better way of featuring the double bass than by putting an instrument that cannot do the things the double bass does, which is the harp cannot really sustain a sound as well as a double. I mean, yes, it is sustained, but it's not in the same level, which is why there's so many long notes in the double bass and the cello. So in a way, they complement each other. And you're able to hear the long melodic line while the harp just sort of reinforces as a guitar would, and someone telling a story. For me, the theme, both times that it appears, it's actually the most simple, beautiful storytelling. And then I love how, for example, going into the first variation with the strings, it actually takes that theme, and it's, I can only imagine me reading a story to my son and his mind starting to wander, but there are elements of the story that he still hears because I'm continuing to read it to him. And that's exactly what Hinastera does, which is you still have the elements of the theme, but your mind starts to wander in all kinds of different places. And the story keeps unfolding.
So you're about to step on stage and conduct one of the most beloved and brilliant masterpieces of the 20th century orchestral repertoire. What is it about the Rite of Spring, even after 100 years, that remains vital and almost revolutionary for people hearing it for the first time, even in this century?
First of all, the story of the piece and what it represents and the story that it tells the piece is just as shocking as the way that it is told. And I think there is a part of all of us where we don't actually understand how could our ancestors, in a way, or different cultures from the past, is the killing of someone or the sacrifice of someone, are we able to accept it today as something that who we were, you know? And I think in a way, this piece asks those kind of questions and it makes you think, it makes you wonder. Now, this is not a true story by any historical standards, but we know that other civilizations have done this. You know, like the Mayan civilizations used to have a ritual of sacrificing young adults and choosing someone that then was celebrated. And they were, I mean, yes, they were probably, you know, on drugs and things like that, that they would not really be able to tell what was happening. But they felt so honored to be the chosen one. And then the way that it's told, it's just the most spectacularly phenomenal. And where Stravinsky is a genius, it's less with the musical content or the musical lines or the phrases, which, by the way, are all rather simple, actually, the melodic structure, so to speak. But the way that he's able to represent the times or to represent the art that was in those times. And the way that he was able to look, for example, he had one thing that was rather interesting for him, for Stravinsky, and that was he would write a melody or he would take a melody and just chop every single note and then just sort of mix it back together somehow, you know, which is why his music sounds so disjointed. And the Rite of Spring is all actually, if you put it together in a sequence that actually makes sense, it will sound a lot less shocking than what it does right now. But the fact that he switches on things so differently and there's so many sharp corners and so many abrupt motives that appear and then disappear and they come again and they're in a different instrument. And they, you know, all these things are little sort of tricks that Stravinsky has as a phenomenal orchestrator that he was, that then the storytelling itself becomes rather interesting because no other piece since and before has used it to that degree. I mean, yes, there are other pieces that have tried to do that, but less successful. And many of them for practicality reasons. I mean, it does require one of the largest orchestras that you ever use to use the Rite of Spring. So, you know, composers later on in the 20th century, Stravinsky himself included, had less of a luxury. I mean, with the fast approach of the First World War and then the Second World War as well, you know, where they all actually went down to very small sizes. So for many, many, many years, nobody continued this trend that Stravinsky started in this massive orchestrations where you do things just because you can. You know, like, is it really necessary to have a bass trumpet part? Could you have found a different instrument? Well, Stravinsky uses it brilliantly, but it does not play such an overwhelmingly important role where then you need to, you know, always have a bass trumpet in the in the orchestra. You know, so these are decisions and these are things that I think other composers looked at, and then it became a more practical response to the music, which is why we don't have a piece that ever challenged the Rite of Spring. Mm-hmm. You know, there was never a piece afterwards that challenged its language and challenged its storytelling. And Stravinsky was smart enough, I think, where he looked back. And including him, he did not challenge his own music and his own ideas, so that then it allowed them to have a really incredible blossoming and flourishing on their own, rather than him trying to rewrite the Rite of Spring at some point in his life and on a different piece. He never did that. He always went in a completely different direction after the Rite of Spring.
Stravinsky lived in exile from Russia for almost 40 years. And when he was asked what his favorite memory of Russia was, he said, "The violent Russian spring that seemed to begin in an hour and was like the whole world cracking." How does that speak to you as you're conducting?
Well, it's exactly that, because it's amazing. You know, the Lonely Bassoon starts this, which is in a way, at the very beginning, I never really feel like, all right, is it springtime yet? You know, but then sure enough, by the time the adolescent girls start to celebrate the spring, which is the first dance, it immediately is there. And, you know, there's a joy and there's an anticipation of, you know, this, my God, what's going to happen? That it's only associated with, I think, watching flowers blossom and watching that first incredible flower that pops through the snow, you know, and yes, comes out. And there's so much resilience in that. And there's so much beauty in the idea that we cannot control it.
Now, you mentioned that the harmonic and melodic motives are rather simple, but the rhythmic challenges, I think, made it very modern. Is this still difficult in this day and age to play and to conduct?
There's one unique gift that Stravinsky has, and that is, as difficult as his music is rhythmically, given enough time, it never fails to become something that feels rather organic, which is why the Rite of Spring, as difficult as it is, it's still danceable. So I think that that's one thing that Stravinsky is unique from many other composers that came after him. And there are composers that wrote music just as difficult or even more challenging rhythmically. But it's hard to find a composer that was able to, the way that I look at the Rite of Spring, even in the most challenging moment, it is absolutely perfect, brilliant the way that it is. I cannot imagine it being better if you wrote it in a simpler way.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you so much. I can't wait to be swept up by the Rite of Spring. Thank you so much, Christian.
Thank you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.